Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Bear Bets. I'm your host, Bear Chris Felica, along with co-host Jeff Schwartz. And we're going to get right into it today. We had a bunch to talk about with the Sweet 16 and the NCAA tournament coming up on Thursday. So we got our man, John Fanti, here to talk about the tournament, what we've kind of seen so far, where we're going from here. And John, it's something, one of the big themes, obviously, of the week has just been how chalky it's been. You've got every 1 and 2 seed in the Sweet 16. You got the one double-digit seed, NC State, with ACC champion, 11 seed. And looking back in retrospect now, is this something that we maybe should have seen coming, being that we had so many upsets in the conference tournaments where you had lower seeds when there was mid-majors and low conference, you weren't really going to get a ton of upsets. Should we not really be that surprised by this?
Well, Bear, I'm in agreement with that. I don't think we should be that surprised by it. And I think when the field came out, I felt really weird filling out my bracket because I didn't have a team at the 6 line, 7 line, or 8 line in my Elite Eight. And it's been 13 straight years that a team beyond the 4 line, meaning 5, 6, 7, 8, and so on, has made the Final Four, 13 consecutive seasons. And it's trending that we're not going to see that this year. And we've only ever seen 4 ones make a Final Four one time in 2008, the Mario Chalmers Kansas year. But when the field came out, like, it wasn't just the bid stealers. You know, you see Duquesne on an 11 line, and you just sit there and you say, I just don't see it. Eventually, the gas is going to run out of the tank. And then you look at even the middle at-larges, and there weren't a lot of convincing cases. I mean, Michigan State was the definition of inconsistent throughout the season. They had their ups, they had their downs. You know, they had a great win in the first round, but they weren't able to keep that up. And I think that we saw that throughout much of the middle of this field. So with that in mind, like, all season long, you know, you cover this sport, and what makes the madness crazy is sometimes you get to the madness and everything that you've covered is out the window. But the top three in this sport have been so overwhelmingly good that some of the teams that are not in the top three had lost to them so badly, but that almost skews your thinking on some of them because they're not that bad. Marquette's not that bad. They just got blown out and humiliated by Connecticut because Connecticut's the best team in this sport. So it's a little bit two-sided, guys, but I'm not that surprised. And I do think it's refreshing for the sport a year after a random Final Four and some smaller brands. We are going to get a Final Four in Arizona that is really fitting.
Hey, whoa. Watch where you're throwing smaller brand around with my Miami Hurricanes. We are a basketball school now. I believe we were 9th out of 14th, or maybe even worse than that, actually, in the ATC. But Bethea is coming in next year. We're back to being a blue blood.
You got unlimited NIL.
John, I'm glad you mentioned the blue bloods being in this spot. I do feel like it's better for the sport to see these big names in the Sweet 16, in the Elite Eight, and moving forward. I know people love upsets, and we love to talk about the Oaklands and whatnot, but do you think it's better for the sport to see all these blue bloods past the first weekend?
Yeah, it is. It's better for college basketball. It really is. For the men's side, you know, I will say this to you guys. I believe that women's basketball has done an all-around better job of promoting its superstars. Now, it helps when you have the all-around best player that we've perhaps ever seen, and certainly the best scorer in Caitlin Clark. But on the men's side, this is huge. You know, it's huge because in men's college basketball the last couple of years, some of the biggest faces in the sport's history have exited the sport, and those are coaches. So right now we're seeing a bit of a renaissance in the sport of some of these big-time brands. But more than anything, like, here's the deal. You have the reigning national champions in UConn who are trying to capture history and become the first since Florida to go back-to-back. You have the best player in the country in Zach Edey. And if Edey didn't make it to this point, guys, I think it would have really, really damaged things, because we've talked all year about redemption, and it looks like that redemption is happening. You know, Houston, Kelvin Sampson has won as much as anybody over the last 5 years. They might not be a blue blood, but they play like one. They've won like one over the last half decade or so. But then you go right down the line. You've got Carolina. You've got Duke. I think Arizona is super intriguing in this tournament. Heck, even Tennessee with Dalton Knecht is a great story. I mean, the Volunteers brought in Dalton Knecht from Northern Colorado. This is a guy who was not getting watched by many eyeballs at all. So he's the second best player in all of college basketball. So we have a Sweet 16 that is rich with storylines. Even Gonzaga, who went from bubbly to from 5 weeks ago to now being a team that's dangerous and playing their best basketball. Recognizable names, Mark Few, Matt Painter, Dan Hurley now. Hurley's become maybe the face of this sport from the coaching side. And, hey, we've got John Shire, who's trying to prove himself. Hubert Davis trying to get to a second Final Four in 3 years. I'm intrigued. I think it's great for college basketball. It means more people, more casuals are going to watch the sport this weekend because they recognize the team on their screens. That's not a bad thing.
So we talk all about it. You just ran through it and put it in great fashion there, just all the storylines that you have like within each of these individual teams or so. So like of these one, I think we haven't had one versus two never in every Elite Eight game. We had like one versus two, three one versus twos and a one versus three. I think the year Oregon was a three and lost to Kansas, I think in that 2008 season, I think it was, but you look at of these one and two seeds, which do you think is potentially in the most trouble this weekend in the Sweet 16?
I would say Marquette. You know, I get a little bit wary of their matchup with NC State. I know that Marquette's a heavy favorite in that one. I think NC State is riding the heater in this, and it's going to be able to score against Marquette. So I'm not sure about that line. In terms of the ones, UConn to me is unstoppable. They're a freight train. They're going to get to Arizona, right? You know, I like the other ones. And like Carolina, could they have some vulnerability because Alabama scores the ball so well? Maybe, but I don't see it. If there's a vulnerable one, it's Houston, because Duke has found something here. Their backcourt was exceptional this past weekend in Brooklyn. Jared McCain had 30 points. That's too shy of a Duke freshman scoring record in the NCAA tournament to only Zion Williamson. And when people are like, well, they beat James Madison in Vermont, you do not apologize for NCAA tournament wins. I've never heard of such a thing. The fact is you're there. Brad Underwood says it best, the Illinois head coach. He's like, the key to making an NCAA tournament run is to keep making the NCAA tournament. And eventually when you roll the dice on the craps table, it's going to come out okay for you. So for me, guys, like I look at it from the standpoint of Houston requires Jamal Shedd, LJ Cryer, and Emmanuel Sharp to be great. They're not a deep team. And I worry about if one of those guys has an off game, the way McCain's shooting it, the way Tyrese Proctor can play. And Duke should have the best front court player in this game in Kyle Filipowski. I think John Shire's team has found something here late. It's very late, but I think they found something here. And I think if there's a one seed that could go down, no, it's not Purdue this time. No, it's not UConn. No, it's not North Carolina. I do think Houston is susceptible in this Sweet 16 game.
Taking Purdue out of this answer, which is the team that gives UConn the most trouble between now and a championship game?
Great question.
Or is it Purdue? You can say Purdue, I guess, if you don't have an answer.
No, from now to a championship game, it's Arizona. Yeah. Why? Why? Because if they play Arizona in the Final Four, it will be an Arizona home game.
Yep.
You know, that's a big element to this Final Four, potentially, is that it is in Glendale. It's been a while since we've seen basically a home game for a team in the Final Four. I don't recall a time that happened. Like I really don't. And I think for Arizona, they're so momentum-based, they're so pace-based, they can score, and they defend. If you look at the metrics, Arizona fits every metric for a national champion in the last 25 years between offense and defense. Two teams are in KenPom top 10 offensive and defensive adjusted efficiency, UConn and Arizona. So if the Wildcats can advance to a Final Four, that Final Four game between UConn and Arizona would be a treat for all of us, would have an Arizona crowd, would have Caleb Love. And if it, Kylan Boswell's the key to this whole equation for Tommy Lloyd. He really is. He's got to be good for them to beat a UConn, for them to beat a heavyweight. But I think that the Wildcats could give UConn trouble. I'd say Carolina, but when the two teams met back in December, Carolina did not have enough, and Armando Bacot was not effective against Donovan Clingan and company inside.
Yeah, I wonder if the way Clemson defended the ball and eliminated Baylor's transition and Baylor's offense, like if Brad Brunell's team can duplicate that effort, that could be an interesting game, I think, this week. It's just while everything you said about the metrics and the player, it's still a small part of me that doesn't trust Arizona when push comes to shove.
I don't disagree with you at all. There's a trust issue. There's a couple of programs here that are big brands, but have been hard to trust in the tournament in the past. Arizona is one of them. And Bear, where you're right is, Clemson's got experience. They've got experience and balance. They know how to slow the game down. Chase Hunter has back-to-back 20-plus point games. PJ Hall's a seasoned vet. Joe Girard's a shot maker. Clemson can slow the game down to their liking if they do that. Nick Cronin said this on The Herd earlier this week. The way to beat Arizona is to stick them in the half court. That's what Clemson can do.
In the other game, in another team, which we certainly have had trust issues with the coach and the team, is Tennessee. And do you think winning a game like that against Texas, it was an ugly game. What were they, 2 of 25 or something like that from three-point range? They were up. Then the next thing you know, Texas has got a shot to tie it or win it. Do you think maybe winning, being on the losing side of so many of those games, you think maybe winning a game like that might cause Rick Barnes to kind of approach his team and like exhale and be like, see, you can win these games. You can gut it out. You can win another. Maybe they finally play loose and free against the crazy. Like, this should be a really intriguing, like, neither team shot the ball well in their second round game. Creighton or Tennessee, and Creighton probably shouldn't even be here right now. But this could be a game where I think we see a lot of threes rain back and forth.
I see Schwartz shaking his head.
Well, the you know, yeah, Creighton shouldn't be there. If we can make a foul shot, Oregon's playing this game. Oh, it's upsetting. Shoot, make your foul shots, everyone.
Well, you should know who to inbound the ball to.
The problem, okay, I don't want to get into Oregon podcast here. There was no one left to play. We had five, no one was healthy.
And
we had a freshman, you know, taking the ball out. It doesn't matter. The Oregon's not in the tournament. Talk about someone else.
No, you know what? I agree with you, Bear. And if you're Creighton, you're like, we got an extra life. To me, Tennessee should have beat Texas by 15. Mm-hmm. They had a horrible shooting performance. They were the far better team, though. But that's the difference with this Tennessee team, is when they are stuck, they still have the second best player in America in Dalton Knecht, in my humble opinion. And he unleashes something from Tennessee that makes you trust them more. You know, it's like the girl that you've been trying to date for a long, long time, and then all of a sudden, you just feel like maybe she figured some things out, but she also believes in you because you got a job, and now you two can be a couple. I mean, Tennessee in the past, I haven't been willing to date them, but now I am a little bit willing to date them. You know, I think that they are a team that with Santiago Vescovi and with Zakai Ziegler and with Adu on the interior, they're still tough as nails. Now they have someone who gives them a little bit of finesse. You know, it's still the same grind you down type of bar that's dirty and requires, you know, it's not looking for any requirements for you to walk in. They've got a $2.99 beer for you waiting at the bar. But now if you want a cocktail, Dalton Knecht can give you a little bit of flair to what they do, and they're capable of winning if it's a finesse type of game. They can win a higher scoring game because they have someone who opens up what they do offensively. I expect Tennessee to shoot the ball better. I would think Creighton does too, but Tennessee's defense could be very disruptive to Creighton. One thing about Creighton, they don't play a fast tempo. It's one of the misconceptions with this Creighton team. Everyone's like, Creighton loves to run. they'd like to when they can get out, but Tennessee's going to try to lock them down in the half court.
And the other thing Creighton doesn't do is foul. So that'll be interesting to see. They don't give the opponent cheapies, and we'll see if that continues this week. John, you're the best man. Enjoy the games up in Boston this week, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
I love the show. I'm the biggest Bear and Jeff Schwartz fan out there. Love you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you to John Fander for joining us. That was great to hear his perspective as we get to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. Now it's gambling group chat time. It's me, it's Bear, it's Will Hill, it's Sammy P. We talk about all the games and all the futures heading into the big weekend of March Madness. Here it is.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So now we are indeed joined by Sammy P and Will Hill for the Gambling Group Chat. We're going to kick around all eight of the Sweet 16 games to be played on Thursday and Friday. So we may as well start it off with the defending national champion and a rematch of last year's national championship game where UConn won relatively easily over the Aztecs. And number seems to suggest that that will be the case again this year. UConn now, as we are recording, this is up to 11 and a total of 136. I don't know about any of you guys, but I'm not interested in stepping in front of the UConn freight train right now. I know the double-digit favorites have not necessarily done great in the Sweet 16 in recent years, but this just doesn't look like a situation where what is different about, like, UConn is better than they were last year. San Diego State is not as good as they were last year. Why should we expect anything different? Will?
Nope, I'm with you. And I'm just looking at the final score last year, 76-59, which it didn't feel like that much of a blowout. It just felt like, you know, UConn was in control throughout. They were comfortably ahead, but it wasn't like a blowout. But that's just what UConn does, where you feel like you're with them. You feel like, hey, we're within striking distance. And then they have one of these runs, these avalanche of a runs where it's 13-2 and it's good night, see you later. And I expect the same thing. I think Dutcher's a good coach. He'll have a good game plan. I think San Diego State will try to slow the game down. So, hey, if you don't want to lay the 11, maybe you just play the under 135.5. Maybe you play the under San Diego State team total. But look, like I said, Dutch will have a good game plan. It's just, will it matter? Does it matter? Is there anything you can throw at this team that's going to disrupt their dominance? And I guess if you have one concern about UConn, it's just kind of the law of averages where, hey, six games last year in the tournament where they just destroy everyone. Now we're two games into this year where they've just buried everyone. That's eight in a row. It's just the nature of the tournament. Hey, they're going to have a night where they shoot 4 of 23 from three at some point. Can they overcome that? I guess that's what you're worried about. But anything other than that, it's hard to see past UConn at this point, Sammy.
I'm in such a weird spot with UConn because it's so easy the last eight tournament games to just say, hey, lay the points with UConn. And it's like, well, yeah, they're good, but they're not great. And yet they keep rolling teams. And it's such a weird team, Jeff, because Danny Hurley is such a psycho in the best of ways. He has this team believing they're the underdog. It's like, you guys were 4-1 to win the tournament before it started, right? Us against the world. What? You're the perennial favorite this year. Like, it's ridiculous to me. And like, the team has bought into the fact that it's us against the world, yet they were literally 4-1 to win the title. I think
the committee helped with that by giving him Iowa State, who a lot of people thought could have been a one seed, by giving him Illinois, who is red hot and winning the Big Ten tournament, and Auburn, who wound up losing, but people thought were deserving of being a highlight. I think Danny was able to kind of sell his team a bag of goods. Like, look, they don't want you to win. Look at what they're doing. They're making your road as difficult as they possibly can. So we saw with Michigan football as well, with the Harbaugh, the spying cheating scandal, and how they were able to turn that into a Michigan versus the world and go on to win a national title. So, like, look, Motivation is a power, is probably the most disrespect and motivation, like the most powerful factors, I think, when you're dealing with like 18, 19, 20 year old kids who sometimes need a little bit of a push. And Sammy, you're right. I think they certainly got it here.
I've said this for years. I think the superpower of elite teams and elite players is convincing themselves they're the underdog. It doesn't just happen with Michigan football. Georgia football 2 years ago, someone after the game, they thought we were going 7-5. Like, no one said that. No one thought that. What Tom Brady has done for years, and the Chiefs convinced themselves they were underdogs. It's what these great teams do. UConn's also playing in their region. They're very good against the spread in their region. Their coach is very good against the spread as well overall in tournament games. I feel like everything's lining up for UConn to do the same thing they did last year to San Diego State. The only question I have, guys, I'll pose to all three of you, is we saw all these favorites cover in the first weekend, these public favorites. Does it give you hesitation to go back to that well now? Because law averages would tell you this is the weekend where Clemson covers and San Diego State covers and NC State covers, like all these bigger dogs end up getting home in these games.
Well, also think about this too. This is a glorified home game for UConn. Yeah. I mean, it's in Boston, so it's going to be 70% UConn people. So this is a rare case where you have, you know, the team that everybody's going to bet is going to be at home, basically. I mean, it's not too far from stores, the campus. So this game I put on a separate island. I can't bet against UConn. I probably should if I didn't take so many stupid dogs, Will, like Morehead State and Akron and Grand Canyon that were covering for 36 minutes and then fell apart late. Maybe I'd be more apropos to get behind the dog, but I'm staying far away from this one, man.
Yeah, even a team like Utah State, which you look at the final score and they lose by about 100 points. I mean, that was 24-20 Utah State early on. You say, all right, they're running some good offense. Maybe they're in it, and then the game is just over. Yeah, one more point on UConn San Diego State. There's a not just a home court advantage, but there's a little travel situational advantage where UConn hasn't been on a plane in a long time. They had the Big East tournament close to their building. Last week, they're in Brooklyn, so rest, travel, schedule, all that's in their favor. Meanwhile, San Diego State was on the other side of the country, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And some of the scheduling of these times is not very friendly to the East Coast viewer and just very hard to figure out. But San Diego State's playing until 1 o'clock in the morning, Sunday into Monday. Now they have to go across the country, play the early game on the other coast, Thursday, the early game. So UConn's just sitting there. They're in their own bed. They're sleeping. They're rested. And they're just licking their chops, waiting for you to come across the country. So add that into another reason in this bucket why it's hard to go against UConn here.
And most likely on Saturday we'll be seeing UConn awaiting the winner of the second game Thursday night, Illinois Iowa State. The Cyclones -1.5, 146. I do have a play in this game, and I just played Iowa State on the money line at -120. I think their defense could give Illinois some problems. Look, I know Illinois has been awesome in the tournament. Grant, it was Morehead State. It was Duquesne teams, not necessarily who are going to be able to slow the Illini down. And yes, at the same time, I know on the flip, Iowa State, you're not going to confuse San Diego State, nor who did they beat in the second round? I'm escaping
Wazoo. My mind. Washington State.
Wazoo, yeah, exactly. You're not going to confuse either of those teams for Illinois. But look, going into this tournament, I was a little worried that Iowa State might be a little bit too trendy of a team. Maybe they would be upset prone in the first two rounds, but they have been absolutely lights out in the first two games. So I do like Iowa State here. Like I paid a little bit of money line tax just to play the money line instead of lay the 1.5. So I do like the Clones here. Sammy, I know Illinois is a team that you're pretty dialed into. What do you got? What do you think about the Illini's chances on Thursday?
Illinois is going to go as far as their guards will take them. That's Terrence Shannon and Marcus Damask. They're two big physical guards, too. And I think it's a great matchup, you know, to watch these two teams play. Unfortunately, it's going to be 10 o'clock on the East Coast, maybe even later when it tips. So Jeff will be asleep, likely. 10-10, the tip time for Illinois and Iowa State.
I'll take the over, by the way, on that tip time.
I mean, good Lord. But if those guards are taking care of the basketball and making shots, Illinois could beat anybody. I really believe that. Their defensive length is a problem. Their pace is a problem. And this total, when we think about Illinois-Iowa State, you know, I would think this would be in the low 140s. But the fact that we're seeing 146, 146.5, guys, that's more of an Illinois total because mm-hmm. Illinois wants to play with tempo and pace. So if it's Illinois' track meet, that's going to be a problem for Iowa State. Iowa State has to slow Illinois down and turn this thing into a half-court game because if they don't, they're not going to win.
Yeah, if I could only watch one of the eight games this weekend, it might be this one, or at least of the Sweet 16 round. And these games are so good. When you don't get the upsets, you get a payoff in the following rounds because all the games are competitive. All the games are good. I don't know that I'm like cutting in line to bet either side of this game. To me, it's a toss-up game. I guess when in doubt, go with the best player on the court, and that's Shannon. But I do think this will be maybe an interesting game from a live betting perspective because if they have a tight whistle and they're not allowing prison rules, they're not allowing Iowa State to be physical, that favors Illinois. That favors Illinois, where yeah. Iowa State wants to be physical, wants to be aggressive. So sometimes you can get a feel for these games early and how it's being called and go from there. I think Iowa State wants to be able to, you know, get away with some of that contact where that would benefit them to play that way. So officiating is going to be a key, I think, in a lot of these games. We're talking about Purdue, Gonzaga. This is another one where I think the officiating is very important.
Jeff, did you make it through the Oregon Creighton game the other night?
I did. I mean, I did. I don't remember what happened. I was so tired and it was tough to remember the very end of that game. I made it. Unfortunately, I did. I turned off like a minute left in second overtime. I was like, this is probably it. I don't think we're winning this game. It's unfortunate. I mean, look, we only got two guys that can score. That's what happens. Illinois has more guys that can score, which is good for them. Would you guys go back to the Shannon? Well, it's 21.5 right now for his point total. He's been over that number six straight games. Does Iowa State just say, hey, man, you're not beating us? Or do you take the over? It feels low for his production level the last six games.
21. It does seem like a low number.
It does seem low. Oh, yeah, it'd be over or nothing, I think, for me.
He gets to the free throw line so much, and he's so explosive and athletic. And that's the other thing. They don't have a true point guard. So oftentimes when you get to that second half and it's a close game, he's bringing the ball up the floor or he takes the handoff at midcourt. So I think the amount of usage that Terrence Shannon tends to occupy, it's very tough. And again, to those two guards, Shannon's 80% at the line. Damask is 90% at the line. So those two guys make their free throws. They just have to stop turning the ball over. But I would lean over on the point prop. I mean, this is a guy, Bear, who might play himself into the top seven of the draft if he has a really good game against Iowa State. And then, hey, he balls out against UConn. I'm not saying Illinois is going to win, but if he has the ability to raise his draft stock even more against a very good Iowa State team and the best team in the country in UConn.
Moving on to the West, first game on Thursday will be on probably around opposite the UConn San Diego State game. When that one gets out of hand, you can flip on over to Clemson, Arizona. The Cats, 7.5, 152 is the total. I'm a little interested in maybe taking Clemson plus the points here, only because I think stylistically, this is the type of game and team that Arizona can have some trouble with. The way Clemson defended against Baylor took them out of their offensive rhythm. When you make Arizona work for a shot, take them out of transition, put them in a half court, and look, I don't think any of us have the utmost faith in trust level in Tommy Lloyd. If Caleb Love doesn't have a game like that, there are quite a few avenues here, I think, to this being a very close game. I have not pulled the trigger yet on Clemson plus 7.5, but I think Will, if I had to play, or actually Jeff, I should say, being that you're a designated West Coast RIP Pac-12 expert.
Thank you.
I would, but right now I could be nudged a little bit into taking the Tigers plus 7.5.
I'm fairly certain Arizona barely covered against Dayton, right? So that's Tommy Lloyd's first cover now in six tournament games. I think he's 1-5 against the spread as a coach. Arizona, just for whatever reason, these games stay close. And Clemson has a lot of ways they can score and keep this game where they, right? They shoot threes well. Arizona doesn't contest catch and shoots very well. Arizona at times can stop scoring. We've talked about this now for a couple of years. They just have moments where they don't score for long periods of time. And so, Will, I would certainly lead Clemson here with their ability to score, I think, more ways than Arizona has.
Yep, I lean towards Clemson plus the 7.5. Eventually, some of these dogs are going to start to cover at some point, you would think.
Please, I think, God.
I'm totally with you. And I think a lot of what Bear said is true, where you got to be able to keep Arizona out of transition. You got to do what Oregon did in the Pac-12 tournament, not to bring up a painful memory, Bear, but make them jump shooters, make them a three-point shooting team, and say, hey, you know what? If you're going to make your threes, we tip our cap, and we're going to go home, you're going to beat us. But they're a really good offense. We say what we want about Lloyd, if we trust him or not, they're a really good offense. And with a really good offense, you can't take away everything. You just got to make them jump shooters. And I think what you like, if you're Clemson, you've won two games in this tournament and you haven't gotten that monster game out of Hall. So I think Clemson plus the points is a good way to go. I mean, you mentioned Lloyd is 0-5-1 or 1-5 now against the spread in the tournament. And even against Dayton, man, that final score, I think it landed on 10, and it was right around the closing number, depending on when you got it. Dayton had their opportunities. They missed a couple of 1-1s that led to threes. I mean, there was a good 6 or 7 point swing there with some missed 1-1s that led to some threes for Arizona. So, look, it's always scary stepping in front of Arizona because their upside is tremendous. And if they could ever get to a Final Four, they'll have a home court. But I do like Clemson plus 7.5 here.
And at the same time, Sammy, as well, what we talked about before playing Iowa State Illinois Live, maybe Arizona Clemson is a live game, and we saw it with Dayton, where Arizona got up 16 or whatever it was at some point. And right, that was when I hopped in and took Clemson live, Dayton live plus like 14.5, just because you know inevitably Arizona is going to have that little bit of a lull, and the dog is probably going to work their way back in the game some. So maybe live might be the way to play this game.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you're a Clemson fan and you want to bet Clemson and they do what they did in the first two games, I mean, they were in total control against New Mexico and total control against Baylor. So if you're thinking about taking the 7, 7.5 with Clemson and you wait until it gets live and Clemson's up 5, you can kiss the 7.5 goodbye. I mean, it works both ways. I think this is a game where Arizona does go down. And here's, to me, the biggest key in the game, the free throw line. Clemson is 79%, boys and girls, at the free throw line. Eighth best team in the country, 79%. Arizona, barely over 70%.
Yeah.
So if this gets into a close game, I mean, Arizona's got a really good team. Awesome defensively. They can get up. They can push the pace. But in these tight games, they have not one, not two, but three guys on the court at all times that you can foul that shoot like 60 to 70%. And if you don't get the ball in the right person's hands, Arizona's going to lose this game late. So I'm inclined to take the points. And look, we talked about the Big Ten and the Big East and the SEC. Look at the ACC. You got North Carolina has rolled two teams. Duke has rolled two teams. Clemson has rolled two teams. Nobody talked about the ACC before this tournament. And now you got a really good ACC team getting 7.5. It feels like a lot.
And in the other game, Will, you've got a really good ACC team laying 4.5 with the monster total of 173.5, North Carolina against Alabama. I grabbed here I am again. Who needs the best of the number? I grabbed Alabama plus the 4 for the column. I probably should have waited, realizing this line was going to go up. Look, I was on Michigan State on Saturday and looked great early. They got out to a big lead, but that game was kind of a microcosm of Michigan State's season. They took a lead, went into a lull. Sammy had that. He had the great retweeted and talked about it in the group chat the other day about the guy on who had a first to 30 Michigan State. They were up 28-15, and he wound up losing the bet, which is brutal. But I had the Spartans. It looked good, and then in the second half they worked their way back in it and then went into another lull. So like, UNC's not going to have that Charlotte home crowd in this game. I do worry that maybe the lack of defense from Alabama could be problematic, but that game Sunday against Grand Canyon, Sammy was talking about earlier as well, like, That was a different type of game. Now, I looked, some of the offensive sets that Grand Canyon had really weren't offensive.
What offensive sets, Bear? Just dribbling, just running in the middle of the defense and losing the ball, and Alabama taking the ball and missing a layup, and then just going back and forth for 7 minutes straight. I've never seen a game like that. Like, my brain was hurting trying to watch a game, and Bama covered in the end, which they should have because they were better.
Give me a break. They should have covered.
They should not have covered that.
They should have covered. I cashed that ticket. Thank you. Sorry,
Sam. This is a great little, there's the right side wrong result, and then there's the right side is the winning side. I am on the wrong result right side. This was like wrong result right side. If you had Grand Canyon, you had the right side.
Alabama shot better from two, from three. They out rebounded them.
They were 8 of 31 from three, and everybody outside of
shooters. Grand Canyon was 2 of 20 from three. Bear, they outplayed them in every statistical category.
Grand Canyon missed 25 threes and 8 million free throws, and they were up by three with 3 minutes to go.
They had 17 more foul shots than Bama. That was crazy, though, the foul shot disparity in that game. The officiating in this tournament, you always get reminded that sometimes it's a little inconsistent in a lot of these games.
That's like in the Iowa West Virginia game the other night. Like, what did people expect? If you didn't think that they were going to trot out an officiating crew of Hayden Fry, BJ Armstrong, and former WWF referee Danny Davis, like, I don't know what planet you were on. You knew Iowa was going to get every call on that game. But anyway, Alabama, North Carolina, I grabbed the four with the Crimson Tide, Will. Am I going to hate myself for grabbing the same kind of point total that I did with Michigan State on the weekend?
I mean, I want to get there with Bama. I do worry they foul too much. I do worry if they don't have an answer for Baycott. With Bama, it's going to come down to the threes. I mean, they are lucky to be in this round. I mean, Grand Canyon could make a three or make a free throw. That was not going to end well for Bama. I don't have a play here. I was actually tempted, boy, under 173.5, maybe get 174. You're playing in Staples Center, the Crypto. It's in L.A. It's a big, cavernous NBA arena. Don't you feel like a Sweet 16 with everything that's on the line, the pace maybe slows a little bit? I mean, 174, you get a 90-80 game. That's a high-scoring college basketball game. That's still under by a few points. So, again, I mean, you could look up and it's 60 all at halftime, and you're like, what the hell did I bet on? But I don't know. Maybe I might have the guts here to have an under here and just – plug my nose. And again, live betting is a good opportunity with Bama because you get such swings. I remember Charleston got up a good 7-8 points early, and you could have got Bama -2 or -3. They give up so many points, they score so many points that there are some good opportunities to jump in live and look, try to middle the game at some point where, you know, one team goes on a run, you bet against them and vice versa. So lean to the under, lean towards taking the points. This is not a game I love either way.
Yeah, Carolina plays fast, but Carolina's defense is criminally underrated. I mean, this is a top 15 defense in so many different ways. And look, Michigan State was not a gangbuster team by any means all year, but to hold them to 6 of 16 from three in the game, that was impressive because that team came out, and Bear just brought it up, 28-15. And then for the remainder of that game, they couldn't make a shot. And this is a game, if you want to bet the under, it's probably going to be the sharp side. You know, they're going to let this kind of build up over the next couple of days. They're going to come under 174. If you bet the under, Will, you probably don't want to watch it because you're going to see that like 8-9 point minute and you're going to want to hide under the bed, and it's totally fair. But so many things have to go right to get over 174. Like, you get 1 4-5 minute dead patch, this game is going to stay under, barring you avoid overtime. That's the only thing that's going to kill you. I happen to know a couple of guys that are going to let this get to the tip, 174, 174.5, and then they're going to come under in this game because that is so many points. And usually you don't get these 95-90 games when you get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four, because defense actually matters in games like this.
You mean like under 148.5 in Oregon, Creighton? We're kind of
talking. How many times are we going to talk about this game, guys? You continue
because it was an awful beat for me.
Yeah,
Will, it wasn't fun. It wasn't fun for me. It took two friggin' overtimes for us to lose.
I'm laying in bed at 12:25 a.m. trying to watch the end of this game, trying to stay awake as an Oregon fan. Go ahead, Sam.
Hold on, Jeff. Okay, so Grand Canyon was the right side. Was Creighton the right side against Oregon?
No.
Okay. All right. Wanted to clear that up.
My Grand Canyon point was, Bama shot better, less turnovers, and the free throw thing was the problem. But here's the thing about this game I worry about, the North Carolina, is as of right now, 92% of wagers are North Carolina. Like, that's just everyone is betting Carolina.
It was the same way against Michigan State.
I know, but it's because of we saw Alabama play so poorly against Grand Canyon. We saw North Carolina play so well. And at some point, we keep mentioning this, I know Sammy's waiting for this, the public is going to get axed, right? There's going to be a moment of this tournament where that's going to happen. And this feels like the game where, and I think Bear's correct being on Alabama here, where it could certainly happen because, again, you're looking at last results. North Carolina blew it. Michigan State, Bama struggled to cover against Grand Canyon, and now they both meet in this game.
Can I read a quick parlay from my cousin who never wins? I'd like to share this with the group chat.
Yes, please.
This is on Saturday. It was a $15 parlay. Good. $15, right? Arizona minus the points, Gonzaga minus the points, North Carolina minus the points, Iowa State minus the points, NC State money line, Tennessee money line, Illinois minus the points, Creighton minus the points.
Winner.
And he sends me a text after the Creighton game with the parlay screenshot. It was 15 to win like $400. And he goes, man, this is easy. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to die on the spot. This is how I die right here. I couldn't believe it. Just favorite. Who's the only favorite that lost? Was it Baylor?
Yes.
In the Sweet 16? The only favorite that lost outright was Baylor. That never happens.
15-1 money line favorites. It's been, and someone, a buddy of mine from Odds Jam texted me the other day too, saying that, I guess there was a Bet Labs tweet or a note out there, like sides that received like more than 65% of the tickets or something like that are hitting at like 75% or something.
Yeah.
It's been a massive public tournament, and we'll see if it turns around. And I mentioned North Carolina was a huge public side of Michigan State. North Carolina State continues to be a massive public side. The ACC champion, the 11 seed Wolfpack, 6.5-point dog against the Marquette. And this is the game that I want no part of. Will, because I could see a scenario where NC State finally runs up against it, but at the same time, Marquette's not deep. Really kind of fortunate to get out of that Colorado game with the win. Like I think of all those ones and twos, I think Marquette potentially could be in the most trouble this weekend.
Yeah, it's an interesting game. First off, shout out to the kid on Colorado. The line's 4.5. It's a 4-point game with 7 seconds left, and he takes his sweet time dribbling and waits till the buzzer to shoot, making sure, hey, if it missed, there's no foul. And that was a very strange last 7 seconds for anybody watching with any involvement in the spread. I actually like the over this game. I think with Burns and four shooters around him, that's a very hard offense to stop. He's such a good passer. He's got such a nice touch. He's so, you know, nimble on his feet for his size. He's really just an incredible athlete. But I don't know if they have any answers to stop Marquette. I think with Kolek, they can put Burns in a pick and roll, make him play in space, and really they're going to have some open looks. So what are we at, 151, 152, yeah, right around that range? Yeah. I think this could be an over. I think winner could maybe be in the 80s in this game. So I like the over here. I would lean towards taking the points. I think maybe NC State has enough offense to hang in here. Again, I'm kind of in my own head here where I'm like, all right, eventually the dogs have to bark at some point. And that's a dangerous game to play. Hey, this is due or that's due. Nothing's due. These are isolated events. They're not related to each other. So that's not a good way to look at it. But I'm going to go with the over here.
You're right with the idea of maybe playing the over, because the spread suggesting 6.5 or so. So you're looking at that foul zone late, yes, potentially, if Marquette is winning. So you can probably tack on probably another 10, 11 points maybe in that game, just between free throws and then maybe a couple of three-pointers. So
I wonder if these teams too, with these totals, if they'll start to foul more, because we've been talking about this off the air a lot this year where, hey, these teams just don't foul as much with a minute to go, 6-point game. They just let it play out and they just kind of walk off the court. But with Texas A&M coming back and almost beating Houston down 12 with under 2 minutes to go, you wonder if teams around college see that and say, hey, it's possible. And these games can drag out a little bit with the point totals and the fouls.
Yeah, Marquette's not the greatest free throw shooting team either. So maybe there's a strategy there for Kevin Keats and the Wolfpack. And when you look at their numbers, 70% at the free throw line for Marquette, that's 245th in the country. Bear's right, though. I mean, this line says that it's a step up in competition, and I think we all know that without having to even say it. It's the elephant in the room. Marquette is much better than Oakland, even though Oakland ruined my life last Thursday, which thank you guys for not bringing it up yet.
I do.
I'm over it. I'm clearly over it.
I'm not.
I never wanted to cry more at a basketball game than when Oakland beat Kentucky. Marquette probably gets a big lead in this game, but I think the point about the over is very good because you're going to get an extended game. Like we might see, like, and let's look at the second half total too when it comes out. Like that might be not a blind bet, but let's say we get a nice pace here in the first half and it's like 40-32 Marquette. I will immediately look at that second half total and think, all right, we're going to get some points here and we're going to get fouls. You just need NC State. The only problem is with that, Will, is that you need it to stay inside 10. Right. If it gets to, you know, if it gets to 25, we're not going to get there in the second half because nobody's going to foul. But I do think that overlook is good and the market agrees with you. Open 150. We're seeing 151 and a half offshore. It's still 2 days away from tip. We taped this on a Wednesday. So we're probably going to see a little bit more over money. I do think we get points in that second half, though. So I'll be looking at that one once we get to the half. Where's that game at? In Dallas. I'll go second half over, likely, assuming it's not a blowout at that point in time.
I like some of the NC State big guys over their rebound numbers in this game, including Burns. He doesn't get a lot of rebounds, only 4.5, but Marquette is a very awful rebounding team. We saw Colorado take advantage of this. I think that if you look for some way to play this game, those props, those over-rebound props for the leading rebounders of NC State is a way to play this for me. I'm going to have Burns later in best bets. I just watched Marquette. Again, if you look at all the big men they play, go over their props almost every game, points, rebounds, because they're very poor, both offensive, defensive, rebounds. It's a big part of could be their downfall in this game is not being able to get any rebounds.
Could he play in the NFL, Jeff, that Burns? Could
absolutely,
he yes. Yeah, you think so?
Yes, he should, after this tournament, just go over the football field, get himself a pair of pads, get ready for the draft. I like the Eagles, obviously, very famously got Mulata, the rugby player. Like, someone would be like, hey, man, I'll draft you in seventh round. I know you can move. I've seen you move a little bit.
What position, line or tight end?
No, offensive line.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he's one of us. Sorry, buddy. You're one of us. But I like those prop numbers in this game because I think that again Marquette's like 273, 274 in rebound efficiency.
I'm surprised he hasn't been scooped up by Raising Cane's or somebody. Yeah, I mean that's just like the perfect marriage between the big guy and you just get a fast food restaurant. Maybe Arby's comes back to the table.
Maxby's.
Yeah, whatever. Just get in there.
He has a deal with like vending machines or something. He has like some sort of fun NIL deal though. He doesn't have like a Raising Cane's one yet. He should get something for food. You know, he owns two vending machines. That's what it is. I'm not even sure it's NIL. I think he just owns two vending machines.
Built like a vending machine.
Yeah. It's a very interesting, thing he's got going on.
That's a good. I always said the one thing I would love to own is like one of those ATMs, like either an adult entertainment establishment or like a race book or something. Like if you own those ATMs and like and people are going to pay like 12% VIG on like getting money out of it, like that is an absolute like business boom.
So do it, Bear.
You should have negotiated into your contract. Yeah. I think you're a little late on that one.
Yeah. I can't wait till Bear Betts goes to Atlanta to an adult establishment next year for football. It's going to be awesome.
Bear Betts is going to go to Dallas for the second game here between Houston and Duke, and it obviously should be a pretty significant home court advantage for Houston here. And I like Houston in this game. I think everyone is focusing so much on what happened in the final minute and 50, whatever that game, like it was impossible that game got to overtime. It's 74-61. It's a 99% win probability before all the ridiculousness happened. Like A&M struggled all night from shooting. Cryer and Shedd and Sharp made huge plays all night long. I don't think McCain is going to have nearly as easy of a time finding finding looks like he did against JMU. I think the interior will not be easy for Filipowski. I know it's been a while since Duke beat a higher seed. They typically don't get too many opportunities to do that, but I think Houston is really good, and I think people are overlooking what they did to the point of getting up 74-61 to like the completely random, nearly impossible change. Like, they had four guys foul out and they still came back and managed to bow up in overtime and tough that out and win the game, man. So I like this Houston team, and I like a -4.
There's a interesting scenario here, Bear, thinking about what you can do with Houston in the Final Four market just to make the Final Four. And I pulled up the all the different prices on Houston to reach said Final Four, as low as even money, as high as 3-2, so +150. Then you look at the money line in this game, and Houston's -190, almost -$2. There's a world where you can take Houston. I know we've sort of missed the boat. You obviously want to bet this before the tournament starts, yeah. But talk me out of a Houston to make the Final Four bet at +150. And then if, say, NC State upsets Marquette, that ticket is basically a cash, yeah, and then you can come back and you can take NC State +8.5 or 9 on a middle, or you can just roll that ticket, because if Houston's going to play Marquette, you're looking at least $2.50, $3 on the money line, and if it's NC State, it's even higher. It's -400. So even though it's sort of beyond the point of like getting great value, Houston's probably going to win this game, and they're probably going to win the next game. So at +150, when other books are offering you even money, +110, I don't think that's the worst idea in the world.
It's not. I like that idea. I might have to drive to Massachusetts when we're done recording this to be able to bet the region and the winner.
That's crazy.
Well, think about the price. I mean, what's the money line price Houston Marquette? It's got to be -260, -270.
Probably.
And then you can middle it, and if Houston beats Marquette by 3, you win everything.
Houston NC State upset. Yeah, that's not a bad idea, but I'm just getting flashbacks. Houston NC State, an upset there would trigger some memories. No, I'm with you. I like Duke here. I just think they're too physical, too tough for Duke. Duke could be a little soft, a little small. It's interesting that everyone's always like, hey, Duke gets every call. Now you're going to put them in a situation where they're in Texas against Houston, where the refs are so important for Houston because they're so physical. They're almost like a football team where they're so aggressive. They're so handsy. You can call a foul or not call a foul, basically any play. And look, I don't care what anyone says. When you have a home court advantage or a semi-home court advantage, that helps sway the officials in some way. So that's an interesting pull and push here with the refs, who gets the calls. But I just think Houston's too tough. And look, give them credit. Anyone that believes in momentum, you show them Texas A&M and Houston the other night, because if momentum had anything to do with it, A&M wins that game and wins it going away. So Houston at least showed some mental toughness. Why they weren't guarding the three-point line any better with 1 second left, I have no idea why you're
Samson's
guarding.
Samson's one of those guys, man. Strange. He doesn't foul up three.
Even if you're not going to foul, just have all five of your guys spread out around the perimeter. You don't need guys under the hoop. That was a very strange alignment, but I'm with you here. I like Houston.
I'm with you guys with Houston. I think they have more ways to win, and the physical part of this is a big thing for me. The only concern I have, again, I think at times we've seen this a ton against Iowa State, like the spookiness of their offense. If they just go dead for 7 to 8 minutes for whatever reason, is that enough to still beat Duke in this situation? I'm not quite sure, but they haven't really shown that much out of that one game this year. They've had some lower scoring losses, but you know that happens in college basketball over 30 games. It's just the question is if they have, again, a 7-8 minute stretch in this game where they don't score very much, is that enough to basically make them lose the game? That's my only question.
I think ultimately it will come down to how well Duke makes shots. If they do make shots, if they continue to make shots like they did against JMU. So that we all kind of, I think, are on Houston here. And I think maybe Sammy's way of playing this is probably the best way of doing it, because if Houston does beat Duke, there certainly will be a significantly more than +105, -1, whatever Houston is to win that region now. So see, you're alive again now. You're over the Kentucky loss. It's clear your mind is functioning again. So we all know it was tough. We all know it was tough, but we're glad that you're back here. So final region, Midwest, Purdue, Gonzaga is the, I believe, the first game on Friday night. Am I correct in that? I am Purdue 5.5, 154.5. What Gonzaga did to Kansas the other day was just a complete dissection from late in the first half to the first 10 minutes of the second half. Just did whatever they wanted, and I can see Gonzaga being a little bit of a public dog here with how good they've been. Ninth straight Sweet 16 now for Mark Few's program, which is an incredible accomplishment. Matt Painter's struggles in the Sweet 16 have been well documented. I can see a lot of people here on Gonzaga. Will, can you?
It's interesting because we talk about, hey, are they due? It is that whole fallacy thing. But the one thing that's real, I think the books are going to adjust these lines for the favorites. They just say, hey, you know what? If you're going to keep beating us on the favorites, we're going to make you pay a tax and everything's going to be bumped by a point, a half a point. So I don't know. Are there going to be public dogs this week? I know NC State's taking some money. So you might be right. Nine straight Sweet 16s. We know this team. I would lean towards Gonzaga here. Now, I know you have some concerns because they're not a deep team. They're a very thin team. They don't have a lot of depth. And if you get in foul trouble against Edie, which you can do, that spells trouble. But I like the fact that they've seen Edie. They played last year and they played this year. So this is going to be the third time since last Thanksgiving they've seen Edie. And he's such a unique guy to prep for, where if you haven't seen him, there's a little bit of a shock right away where, all right, I don't know what to do with this guy. They at least have seen him. They have EK. They have Huff. They've got some size to throw at him. So, again, this is going to be a situation where the officiating is so important. Ultimately, like, Gonzaga was up by 5 in the meeting earlier in the year. They end up losing. Purdue won the game. They won it comfortably. But Gonzaga shot 6 of 32 from 3. Gonzaga is shooting the ball much better recently. They have shot the ball incredibly well the last, you know, month, 6 weeks. So it would be a lean to Gonzaga. I am a little nervous about pulling the trigger just because, hey, if Edie gets your whole team in foul trouble, this is going to get away from you. So again, maybe another live betting opportunity, but it would be a lean towards Gonzaga for me.
Well, finally, we get some size against Purdue. That's going to be nice to watch Zach Edie play against guys that are, you know, 6'7" or 6'8". And it'd be really nice, like Grambling State. He's like playing against third graders. And then Utah State had no idea what to do against Edie. They were just like, let's just whack him. And it, like, Gonzaga at least has the size. I mean, EK 6'9", Huff 6'10", Watson 6'8". Now, Ben Gregg is more of a wing guy, but he's 6'10". They at least have the size to negate entry passes and at least challenge shots. And I think Purdue, I'm rooting for Purdue, because to see them lose last year to a 16, it was funny, but it was also sad. Like, I would love to see them go to the Final Four. That said, watching them is just not fun. It's not a fun watch.
No.
Can anybody, like, back me up? It's not fun watching Purdue trudge up and down the court and just shoot free throws for 12 minutes. Like, to me, I don't want to watch that crap. Yeah. So I'm pulling for Gonzaga by default. But you look at the size and the wingspans that Gonzaga can bring to the table, it's unlike anything Purdue has seen in two games against Grambling State and Utah State. And that's a fact.
I like the over in this game. Both teams can score. The over hits in a lot of Mark Few tournament games. I just want to say that my least favorite talking point is around this game of really any college sports, which is basically you have to win a championship to get validation, right? There's a lot of teams in college football and in college basketball that really aren't championship teams. They're just not going to win. They don't have enough talent. They don't recruit well enough. They're in a bad part of the country for that. But Gonzaga's been in a tournament, the Sweet 16 9 times in a row. Do you know how many programs would love to make the Sweet 16 9 times in a row? And what Mark Few has done with them getting better this season, but just continuing success year after year in Spokane, Washington, is incredible. We should not downplay what they've done because they have not won a title. They're not going to win this year, I don't think, but we should celebrate what Gonzaga has done with Mark Few being there. I hate this talking point of that they have to win a championship to validate how good they've been over the last 9 years.
I would agree with you. They did reach the Final Four. They came very close to winning a national championship, getting a game against North Carolina. So I'm with him. And there shouldn't be any question about what Mark Few has done in Spokane. And I think there is a pretty good sizable chunk of the country that is rooting for them on Friday night. And then last game on Friday, Tennessee-Creighton, the Vols, 2.5, 143.5. I'm curious to see what type, if there are some type of combined 3-point shots made
over
prop in this game, because I would expect both Creighton and Tennessee to improve on the shooting that nights that they had this past weekend. I mean, that's like the only thing I'd be looking at maybe in this game to play, because I just don't know. Like, Creighton's a team I really haven't been able to kind of be on the right side of all year. I've been on the wrong side more often than the right. In Tennessee, like, maybe, like, there's another, I mean, talked about Purdue's failures in the tournament. This is a Tennessee team. I wonder if, and we brought this up earlier with John Fanta, and I'm curious to get your take on this, Sammy P and Will. Like, the fact that you had so many, you know, those types of games where you came up on the losing side, you had a big lead and you nearly blew it, you couldn't hit a shot from the outside, and you survived. I just wonder if Rick Barnes and his team and his program can, like, finally, like, exhale now and be like, wow, okay, we won one of those games now. It can happen. We're not completely cursed. So I wonder if the Vols maybe play a little bit freer and looser on Friday night, despite there's such huge stakes in the game, Will.
Yeah, interesting game. And boy, you think Tennessee will improve on that 3 of 25 from three? Imagine shooting 12% from a three. Like, is that a good sign that they shot 3 of 25 and still won? Or is that concerning? I don't know that Creighton has a good answer for Connect. And that's why I ultimately would lean towards Tennessee, although I'm not crazy about laying 2.5, 3 here with Rick Barnes. It's interesting. I was going to make the same point about Creighton. Hey, they're going to shoot a little better from three. They had a bad night. And I went and, like, kind of fact-checked myself. They got up to 39% from three. Now, some of that was late in overtime. I think they got red hot, but boy, 39% is not that bad. But watching the game, it felt like it was just brick after brick. And not to bring up painful memories with Jeff here, but I don't know. Interesting game, great game. This again falls under the umbrella. Man, this is a hell of a game to watch. I don't know that you look at this in terms of the side in total and find some massive edge, Sammy. It would be a lean towards Tennessee, but some of these games are great to watch. But from a betting perspective, I just don't see a lot where, boy, this line's off. I have to bet this game.
I don't think I'll have a single dollar on it. We've seen the market move up on the total, 142.5 to as high as 144, which plays into your point, Bear, about probably more shots being made. This is my last flag in the ground. Creighton 40-1 to win the whole thing. So please just win this game, and then I can maybe do what I have to do. That would be nice. And it would only be fitting, guys, if the great white hope from Northern Colorado was the guy that finally got Rick Barnes to where he needed to go. Wouldn't that just be a great story for college basketball? Like, you need this kid that nobody knew who he was a year ago. We need him to get Tennessee to the Final Four, but he's a bucket, man. He's a walking bucket, that Dalton Connect. And that's going to be, I think that's my favorite game on the board. The Friday 10-10 Creighton, Tennessee tip. That's going to be an awesome game.
Are you staying awake for that, Sammy? Are you going to make it? It'll tip about 10:30. Kind of the theme that you guys have been going, I like Creighton over 32.5 points in the first half. I just think we see in the tournament when a team shoots poorly that shoots well most of the time. The next game, I know this game is obviously days removed from the last game they played, but they tend to just have a better first half or full game. So that's the way I look to play this game, at least early on. It's just taking Creighton to shoot the ball much better early in this game. Will's point is accurate. They were 39%, but Will, it felt like they were 25% in regulation. I think the second half is when they made a bunch of their threes. And so I would lean toward Crane scoring a bunch of points early in this game.
But I guess, we still think this is UConn's to lose, right?
Yes.
I do.
Sammy? Yes?
Yeah, boring.
Outside of Creighton?
Who's the most
fun? Is that going to be UConn?
Who's the most fun champion? Who's the most fun to win this
tournament? The most fun champion?
Most fun realistic champion? Yeah, yes. NC State, but that's not, I don't think that's
realistic. Yeah, they're not going to win the championship.
Most fun. I would say Kentucky still. Sorry, Sam.
The teams that are left. The teams that are left, Will.
Okay,
teams
are like, you didn't specify.
Who'd be the most fun to win this championship? Or the teams that are left?
Maybe Arizona, just because the Pac-12 is going away and everyone's bad-mouthed Boyd. You know? Yeah, I don't know.
I'd agree with that.
Nobody outside we've had that stat. Nobody in the West Coast has won in a while. So maybe Arizona.
What about Gonzaga? Mark Fuse. Gonzaga
would be a good one. That's a good answer. Gonzaga. That might be a better answer. That's a good one.
Gonzaga would be the team I'd choose. Yeah.
Kentucky's the real answer, though, to be fair.
we're just going to put him in the Final Four anyway.
Sneak him back into the tournament. Yeah. They just show up at the building and say, who do we play and what time?
What's up?
But Calipari develops good pros, and that's what you should be excited about Kentucky. So he develops the good pros. Doesn't matter if they win or lose in his actual job. but he gets guys to the NBA. You should celebrate that, buddy. You should wager on that somehow.
How do you not know that the only thing that Golki guy does is shoot threes? How do you not know that?
Clearly they did.
Let it go, Sammy.
Unfortunately,
let it all out.
Unfortunately, we have to let it go. We hope that we have a bunch of correct answers within those eight games right there. Hopefully the Sweet 16 will be better than what the first, second round drew. Guys, appreciate you. Talk soon.
All right, another wonderful Gamma group chat there, Bear. It's time for our best bets for a weekend of ball. Now, these bets obviously are just for Thursday and Friday. Saturday and Sunday, the games are not, they're not out yet, right? There's no lines yet. There's no opponents yet, Bear. So give us your best bet for Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, I talked about it in the Gamma group chat with the guys. I like Iowa State on the money line to beat Illinois. I know Illinois has been an offensive juggernaut so far, but I think going against an Iowa State team that defensively has shut a lot of teams down this course of the season, I think it's an Iowa State team that's been still a little undervalued. Like I said, I was worried about them maybe being a little bit too trendy of a pick so far in the tournament. And those teams, the history is usually not very, very kind, but they've looked great in the first two rounds. Yeah. I think they do enough against those really good Illinois guards. And we'll see, lack of a point guard, if that maybe hurts Illini against a good defense if Iowa State chooses to apply a little bit more pressure. So give me Iowa State on the money line against Illinois.
I liked their win against Washington State the other day. You know, Iowa State shot so well against South Dakota State in that first game, came back, started a little slow against the Cougars, or sort of a grinded out team. The Cougars beat Arizona Bear, remember, twice this season, right? Like, and they just sort of grinded them down and down and down. I think the question obviously is, can they grind down the Illinois point guards? I tend to agree with you on this one. My best bet is taking the offensive linemen of the schools that are left and DJ Burns over 20.5 points and rebounds for the NC State big man. He can score. He averages about 13 points a game, four or five rebounds. But more importantly, guys, Marquette does not defend in the post, and they do not rebound very well. Go look back. Colorado Lampkin hit his points and rebounds over. Go back and look at the big men they have played. They give up a ton of rebounds and a ton of points inside. The offense tend to flow through Burns out to other players. So give me this wager. The only concern I have, Bear, is he only plays about half a game.
So why is that?
It's got to have – he's a big buddy, Burns. I know basketball is going well for your buddy. I'm telling you. Put a helmet on, put some shoulder pads on, go play left tackle, man. Got a future. It's a lot of money playing left tackle in the National Football League. So
how many vending machines on this bet?
I think he owns two vending machines. It's a fun, and he just did a partnership with another podcast to sell some merch. So things are going well. This is the point of NIL, right? Is what happened with Burns, having the kid from Oakland that filmed a tax commercial in the hallway of his hotel. Like, this is the point of NIL, right? Is the players can cash in on their name, image, and likeness in the moment, in the actual moment. Yep. There's also an offer for Caitlin Clark to go play in the Big Three for $5 million. This is great for all these athletes to get these endorsements and get the money they can.
It is. And this is the spirit of it, not what's going on and dropping a bag of money and trying to come transfer to my school. So that's a different podcast for a different time and a different day and a different point in the season. We'll get to that, I'm sure, at some point. But good chat with the guys today. Make sure you check us out tomorrow as well. We'll have another podcast drop with Ben Verlander from the Putting Bats podcast. We'll go over our favorite baseball bet storylines, a little preview of the season. Maybe next week we'll be back with another little Final Four preview with Will and Sammy and the guys. But that's it for now. Always appreciate you guys checking us out and rating, reviewing, and subscribing wherever you get your podcast. Appreciate you watching us on the YouTube channel as well. For Sammy P, for Will, for Jeff, I'm Bear. Bless you bet. The more you lose when you win.